Why, hello, it is Adam. Welcome back to Bringing It Backwards, a podcast where both legendary and rising artists tell their own personal stories of how they achieve stardom. On this episode, we hung out with William Elliott Whitmore over Zoom video. William was born and raised in a very small town in Iowa, in Lee County, Iowa. He grew up on a farm. William talks to us about how he got into music and songwriting. He talked about a band he was in prior to just wanting to do the singer-songwriter thing on his own, learned banjo and guitar at a very early age. He's toured with some amazing punk bands, and he's deep-rooted in that punk rock scene as well as the folk and bluegrass scene. William talks to us about putting out his first few albums, getting signed to Southern Records, and doing those three albums, which all kind of had a similar concept behind them. He talked about signing with Anti and doing three albums with them. He put out a cover album called Killanova, we talk about, and then another album with Bloodshot in 2020 called I'm With You. And we hear all about William's new album, which he's putting out independently on his newly formed Whitmore Records called Silently the Mind Breaks. And we talk about the music video and most recent song from the album, Adaptation and Survival. You can watch our interview with William on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards. It'd be amazing if you subscribe to our channel, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Bringing Back Pod. And if you're listening to this on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, it would be amazing if you follow us there as well and hook us up with a 5-star review.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with William Elliott Whitmore. Hey, William, how's it going?
How's it going, Adam? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. You can hear me, I take it?
Yeah. I was laughing about, I don't know if I'm too loud or too soft or what, but I was laughing about how we all became experts at the Zoom thing during the pandemic.
100%.
We all kind of were forced to like become tech experts and stuff. Those of us that weren't used to doing stuff like that. And now I haven't done it in a while. So I had to kind of reacquaint myself. So I'm hoping everything's working.
Oh, looks great. Sounds great. Yeah, I know. I actually had the benefit, but my wife has always kind of worked from home, working for different colleges in California. So she was pretty good at Zoom. Like, they used it quite a bit before, you know, all those other companies started to, like, Google Meet and all that stuff started to come around. So she knew Zoom kind of well from, like, before this started. But and early in the pandemic, we used to do all these interviews in person. And then it was like this way. And in the very, very beginning, I was trying to figure out how to like record phone calls in, not into Zoom, but just like in general. And then everyone became like adapted to Zoom, and it was like, okay, this has made it a lot easier. And now it's almost like I still continue with Zoom because I can interview people like you across the country. So,
yeah. Well, I see you have a San Diego hat. Are you from Southern California?
Yeah, I'm originally from San Diego, lived there pretty much my whole life, except for I spent about 5 years in San Francisco. And now I live in Nashville, Tennessee, though.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It made me think of, I used to play at a place called the Casbah.
Oh, man. I love the Casbah. Good friend of mine books that venue.
Yeah. Is it still around?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
it's,
cool.
It made it through the pandemic, surprisingly.
Well, not everything did, you know? So, yeah, I really like that place. I really like getting to California in general, but I also really like getting to Nashville. So that's really cool. You're there. That's a good, Nashville always feels like a small town.
Yeah.
To me in certain ways when I'm there, and I always really like it. And so, but yeah, I'm coming to you from Lee County, Iowa, which is the, I always have to kind of tell people, it's the southeastern part of the state by the Mississippi River. So it's, that southeastern part of Iowa. And it's a place no one really thinks of. And so I always have to kind of give a geographic little pinpoint on where it's at. But I live by the Mississippi River. So, St. Louis is like 3-hour drive south, and Chicago's like a 3-hour drive east, and so on.
That's nice.
Yeah, no, it's great for touring, but like growing up, I live on a farm here. My wife and daughter and I live on the same farm that I grew up on, actually.
No way. So, that's amazing.
Yeah. So life led me all sorts of places, but then I kind of ended up right back here, which is where I love. And that's just kind of how life worked out. But yeah, growing up, I mean, I live in the woods. I live in the middle of nowhere pretty much. Like, and so I really like it. But growing up, it was always, you know, it was a little isolated. Mm-hmm. Besides school and stuff, you'd see people at school and everything, but music was always a way to kind of feel connected to other people and other things and other cultures mm-hmm. and stuff. So yeah, music was always important growing up. Like my folks love country music. And so they played a lot of that growing up. So yeah, the Nashville connection there made me kind of think of that. But so
yeah, we live on the outskirts, like a little more rural area, not too bad, but we're about 40 minutes south of Nashville.
It's kind of perfect.
Yeah, it's nice. So, you know, we have more space and it's not really small towny, but it kind of is, you know, everybody kind of knows each other in the neighborhood and around the area. But we can still drive out to Nashville and there's some bigger areas kind of barely like 20 minutes away, which is nice. I wish I had a bigger plot, place, you know, bigger land plot. When we moved here, my wife was like, oh, and she wanted to get a, you know, acres of land. And I'm like, I was kind of nervous. I'm like, well, we're coming from San Diego where it's all pretty, you know, compact. But now that I've been here, I'm like, I wish we would have done that. Got the bigger land. You know what I mean? But well,
it won't be the last place you land. Maybe there's some acreage in the future there.
I'm hoping so. I mean, I would love to live kind of like in an isolated area like you're talking about. I have two boys, one of them's 7, and just like if we had enough space where he could just run outside and be in the woods like all day, like, he would do it. So I wish I had a little bit more space.
My daughter's 3 or almost 4, and like yesterday it snowed here, and her and my wife now, it was kind of that first snow winter, kind of first says like here I am. It'll melt here next week or whatever, but yeah, they're out making snow people and doing all that deal. And so she loves it. So there's a lot of great about it. Like I said, growing up, that's how it was, you know, and I have an older brother and sister. And so we weren't, you know, not like totally isolated or whatever, but there was that feeling of like a little bit of isolation, but music was always an important thing. And so I want that to be the same for my girl. Like we, you know, we play records and like, she knows how to put the needle on the record and stuff.
Oh,
and,
wow. That's cool.
And I teach her about like, we were listening to like Roberta Flack.
Oh, cool.
You know, I want her to hear these like badass female voices. I mean, everything. Sure. I mean, every kind of voices, but she's into singing already kind of.
Wow.
Singing in quotes, vocalizing, singing along and stuff. But
yeah,
we listen to like the Beatles and Roberta Flack and all sorts of different things. And so
I love that. That's so cool.
Yeah. Cause that was important to me growing up. I mean, my folks would play like my mom's favorite was Willie Nelson.
Oh, that my mom loves Willie favorite. Nelson also. Like I'm playing Willie. You better play Willie Nelson at my funeral. I was like, yikes, that's a little dark. But
yeah, geez, that's you know a long time from now, Mom. A long time. But yeah, that was you know one of her favorites. But like, Willie kind of spans all, like Dolly Parton or something that kind of spans. Like everyone can agree on Willie and Dolly these certain things. So that was her favorite. So we had a steady diet of that growing up.
That's cool.
I just loved his weird style. I was like, this doesn't sound like any other country. I couldn't even articulate why, but I was like, this doesn't sound like anybody else, which of course now I know like he got flack for early on. Like he didn't sing like anyone else. His chords were too jazzy for everyone else, but he carved
his
own way.
That's what makes him him, right? You know?
Yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, my folks also loved, I think their first date was a Charlie Pride concert. Played the county fair and they went and saw Charlie Pride. So that was one of their favorites, a ton of Charlie Pride growing up. And so when it was time, I always liked singing. and just making up little ditties and writing little stories and stuff. And so when I finally learned a few chords on the guitar, I was able to kind of like put the two together a little bit. And yeah, my dad played guitar, my mom played piano, and they would have said not very well, but they're passed on now, but they would have said not very well, but music was around, you know? And so my dad had a Sears and Roebuck acoustic guitar.
Wow.
And that was my first. Yeah. I still have it, like a junky old guitar.
That's awesome. I love that. I love hearing that people save that first guitar. That's so cool.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm sentimental. I'm really sentimental, and I don't throw nothing away. And so,
I'm like that too.
Unless it stinks, unless it stinks, then I throw it away. But anyway, so he had that. And I remember learning, I had the little chord book, Mel Bay guitar. There used to be this series of guitar books and instrument books by this dude, Mel Bay, and you could learn chords. And it took me a long time to get the hang of it, but, yeah. So you finally realize like, oh, all these songs are just a few chords and I can maybe kind of do this. And so, yeah, it kind of went on from there, but I want to impart that onto my daughter too. I've got a drum set out here in my little home studio.
Oh, rad.
She kind of messes around on a little tiny acoustic guitar, but she really likes to get behind them drums. And I tell her, oh, you don't play guitar. There's a million of us schmucks.
That's what I did to my son.
And play drums or bass.
Yeah, I gave him a.
You'll always have a gig.
We bought him one of the electric kits at the time, like when he was probably three. Yeah, when COVID happened, when it started, and we bought him an electric kit because at the time we lived in a townhome, so I didn't want to drive the neighbors insane. So we got him an electric kit, and I called a buddy of mine who's a pretty good drummer. I mean, he's a really good drummer, but he's done some things. And I'm like, dude, what do I get him? And he's like, he sent me one. He's like, you need to get this one that has the real kick. He's like, don't get the trigger kick, get the real kick, and everything else is, you know, whatever. And he loves it. He loves it. And that's awesome. So happy I did. And it was like, I don't want him to get into I want him to learn guitar at his own pace. But it's like, if he can drum, like you said, you can get the pick of the litter when it comes to bands, right?
Yeah, the all too rare drummer, like growing up. Yeah, when it was time to start like playing with other people, you know, yeah, everyone wants to play guitar and that's fine. But, you know, you knew like 20 guitar players for every one drummer, you know, basically. Right. And then I got, and so, yeah, so tell him, yeah, he'll always have a gig. And there's just something about the rhythm. Like even now, I play a kick drum on stage and a banjo and a guitar sometimes, but the drum is like my favorite. I just kick a drum, but that's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
Like I'm a wannabe drummer, but that rhythm is everything to me. I mean, the rhythm, once you find that rhythm, you know, you can start making up songs and whatever, find some melodies and stuff, but that's cool that you had some inside knowledge from your buddy that was like,
yeah,
here's the thing to get, man.
Like I could play guitar and I was in bad band. I knew I would never make it as a musician. I loved music and I got into radio because I'm like, okay, I can be around it. But I'm not obviously a player or a songwriter or anything. Like I was admire those people and wish I could do that. But I just love music. So I was like, how do I get into this? And a friend of mine's dad was on a radio station in San Diego and he kind of helped me. And then I did that and got a job in the Bay Area for a bit and came back to San Diego and, well, now I do this, but it was just, awesome. I tried to be around it, you know, and I couldn't figure out another way to do it. And this was my only in, but well, I knew the drummer was hard as hell. You find one guy that could play and then he would like not, if you didn't have the song or you weren't doing what he wanted to do, he'd just be like, oh yeah, like, I'm busy. You're like, oh man.
Yeah, they kind of have all the power, you know,
they do.
And a lot of the responsibility, lugging all that stuff around, you know.
Right. So, got to have a truck or a bigger car.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so that's why I really love the banjo too. Like, so I started on a little acoustic guitar and then both my grandpas played banjo.
Wow.
And so I got, you know, those were around and it was just kind of around and I got into that like as an early teenager and I thought, oh, this is what I love. Like this is, I still love guitar too, but the banjo is kind of like what I love because it's a drum and a string instrument, you know,
Yeah.
The way I play it, especially, it's mostly like a drum with strings. And so I really love that. And I could never do the like super bluegrassy Ralph Stanley fancy stuff on it. I still can't. But I learned if I could like play it as a rhythm instrument, that was what I like to do. So I started playing the banjo and writing little songs on that, like even as a teenager, like starting to make up things. And you just start to just get a feel for that stuff. And I'm sure you've talked to so many people on here.
A lot. Yeah. Banjo isn't a big one though. Not a lot of people talk about playing banjo, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I've had a lot of bluegrass people and that do, but it's like not as many as, you know, not a whole lot of people go, I learned a banjo as a teenager. It's just like not the go-to really.
And I just fell in love with it. And by that time, I talk about this a lot because it was so formative, like the different music that you hear throughout your life, but especially that stuff you start to discover on your own. There's the stuff you heard from your folks that was like a base layer that you grew up with. For me, it was country music. And so that's just in there. That's like a base layer that's in there. But then you start to rebel against that a little bit. You become a teenager and you start to be like, okay, who are the misfits? Like who's Fugazi? Like, right. I always talk about it, but I would get this magazine called Thrasher Magazine.
Oh yeah. The skateboarding magazine. Speaking of the Bay Area. Oh man, dude. I was a skater kid growing up.
Me too. And I still love it. Like I can't do the things I could do, but I will cruise. I will skate all day.
Oh, there's a skate park by my house. And I got my older son into skateboarding. And I'm like, right when he was like, oh yeah, I'm interested, I'm like building him fun boxes and like a little bit. We're going to the skate park. Oh, I'm way too. I can't hurt myself, but I'm just I love skateboarding. Yeah, Bay Area, the Thrashers out of San Francisco.
Yeah, RIP Jake Phelps. You know.
Oh man, yeah.
But so like you could get that at the grocery store, the local little grocery store. So got into skating in my little small town. Like there's not a ton of pavement, but you could kind of skate and country style skating. You know, and using curbs and stuff. We'd build little ramps, but that magazine's influence can't be overstated. Like I would pour through and just read, you know, not just the skating, but all the music. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just, that was like such a window into a world. You'd read the notes from the underground and be like, okay, Bad Brains, I got to check that out. What's that? Okay. Minor Threat. Mm-hmm. Okay. That dude now has a band called Fugazi. Okay. Got to check that out. You know, you just like go down the line. And I was just like, that was my baseball cards. Like that was my, I was just a nerd about like pouring through and getting that stuff. So then,
Did you get skate videos and stuff? Yeah. I mean, we're like, see, for me, it was the magazines I loved them. I just go through and be like, oh, you know, so-and-so I'd rip them out and, you know, tape them to my wall and stuff. But like the videos, you'd watch a video part from, you know, a 4-in-1 or like, you know, an early Toy Machine video, and I'd be like, who is this? And like, oh, this is, you know, London Dungeon by the Misfits. And I would buy the album just for the one song. And then the whole thing is, you know, insanely awesome. But it was like, that's how I discovered like Iron Maiden, because my parents weren't into like heavier stuff. It was more like, the Beatles and I guess like the Zeppelin and stuff like that, but nothing like, you know, that far over. And that's how I discovered bands like that.
And then they're your own forever. Like,
right.
That's sort of like that. It's like, oh, that's mine from now on. I'm going to put that in my pocket forever. And I still love all that stuff because those formidable years, man, you get that shit. And it wasn't your folks. It's like, this is mine, you know?
Right.
And so that it'll always be important. But those skate videos, you're absolutely right. Obviously pre-internet, way pre-internet, being a common thing. Like, there was a video called Ban This. There was, I'm 45. So my time was like late 80s, early 90s. Like you'd get the video, the VHS copy of like Hocus Pocus by H Street was a big one.
Sure.
Search for Animal Chin, like all this stuff. And then a million great ones since then. But the early Toy Machine ones were rad. Like, so you'd get those influences, you know? So I was like, early on, I want to do this country thing and folk thing, but like kind of through this punk lens where I kind of, you know, with a little bit of an aggressive style or maybe a, I don't know. It was a little sloppy too. And I was like, okay, I heard the Ramones, so that's okay. And
yeah. What you're doing is so unique. It's like the faster acoustic guitar and like the raspier punk rock kind of vocals, but it's not all like that. But I mean, I was watching your new music video. I've listened to your albums and obviously the banjo's there and I've seen live videos and stuff, but the new video you just released is just you in a hallway with an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
Which is rad.
I still love the guitar too. And yeah, I'm glad you checked it out. We kind of runned and gunned that one while we were recording another video. That's at an upstairs of a venue in Iowa City called Gabe's.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a punk rock venue. I mean, I saw some of my first great shows there. That's in a town called Iowa City, which mm-hmm. is like 90 miles north of where I live. So growing up, that was the nearest town. The university is there. So it was, you know, college town. You could meet different kind of folks, like folks of all different stripes and colors. And it was such a cool thing growing up to visit. It felt like the big city, but there's a few great music venues there. It's right on Interstate 80. So a traveling band would often hit Iowa City between like Omaha and Chicago or Minneapolis and St. Louis or whatever. Mm-hmm. Iowa City is kind of this central thing. So you'd get like Mike Watt would come there. And like, I mean, Nirvana played at this place, Gabe's, way back in the day and a ton of other great things. So that venue was always important to me. So when we were making videos for this new album, out January 26th, by the way.
Yes.
shameless plug.
No, we'll plug it all day. No, we'll talk to you about the whole new album.
We'll get into that too. But so I was like, oh, we'll make a couple of videos in the upstairs of Gabe's, it's where I met the woman that's now my wife. It's where like we just spent millions of hours in this place. It was our kind of home away from home, this dingy punk rock venue. And so that's where that video is. It's like in one of the back hallways. And I thought it was befitting kind of a folk punk song like that is. And so, yeah, I always just gravitated toward that. And I've got quieter, slow songs too that I like
cool. But like it right out. I was like, wow. And it's interesting because you brought up the Casbah earlier. The first thing I thought of when I watched the video, I was like, oh, this kind of looks like the Casbah a little bit.
Oh, it's very similar vibe. This place, like, Gabe's. Yeah. The Casbah, like, you know, there's a place called the Mohawk in Buffalo, New York. Like, there's a place called the Grog Shop in Cleveland, Ohio. You know, like a lot of towns have a version of that, you know, dingy club that's held up by stickers. You know, you feel like if you took the stickers off the wall, it would all fall down, you know.
Yeah, the whole bathroom's covered in them.
But the Casbah, man, I haven't been there in a long time, but that I always liked that. But yeah, it's that vibe. And so I just, gravitated toward that.
Awesome.
And then,
sorry, go ahead.
I could just yammer and yammer, so forgive me.
No. That's what I love about podcasts. I mean, coming from radio, I'd have, you know, you get 2 minutes if that, and they'd cut it down to 45 seconds, and that was your interview.
So in Iowa City, when I turned 18, I moved there.
Oh, okay.
And
were you in a band at that time, or were you playing with people around your town?
Yeah, not a band, but I played with my cousin. My cousin and I sort of started playing guitar around the same time, which was awesome because we would kind of stoke each other up to like mm-hmm. learn chords and learn songs. And so we would do like cover songs around just like little DIY coffee shop slash. We used to play at this karate studio. There was like a karate dojo that some of our friends like took karate lessons at. And we would do shows there.
That's so interesting.
Before I knew like what DIY was, I never even heard that term until later. It was like, oh, we were doing a DIY thing. And so we were doing that. And so I had a base of like how to perform, or, you know, how to like get in front of a crowd and do it.
Uh-huh.
And then, moved to Iowa City. I wanted to start a punk band. I had a punk band with some buddies called Lost Cause. And we wanted to sound like Minor Threat pretty much. And we never got there. never were able to do that. It's a lot harder than it sounds.
Right.
So, but it was just fun, like wailing away in the basement. So I was like, no, I need to stick to just my country acoustic folk roots, man. I'll let the experts be in the punk bands. I'll let other people do that. And so I just kind of stuck to what I, you know, I was kind of honing the thing that is what I do. Mm-hmm. And met, you know, met a ton of people there and that are still my best friends today that still play on my records today. Like when I need a guitar or drums, or I still call these same guys from 25 years ago that I first met, you know.
That's amazing.
And I say this often, but I tell people, like younger folks coming up, one of the greatest things you can do is just meet people, meet cool people, like go to whatever venue, whatever town you live in. Now on the internet, it's even easier. You can find your community a lot easier, right. You know, a lot easier.
Right,
if you're
online.
Looking for it, you can find your people, but like find your people. It's so important. And so that's how I started to like tour. You know, they were kind of already into the DIY thing. They were more of like a screamo. This was like in like 99, 2000. So they mm-hmm. were, it was like post-punk screamo. They were great. Sure. They were called the Vita Blue. And they were already in touch with that network of DIY basements, VFW halls across the nation, house shows. Like there's this whole network you can do. And I was like, oh, I didn't know you could just do it without a booking agent. You can do it without a manager. You can do it on your own. Again,
yeah, like, I was just learning like venues probably and just trying to get a show anywhere.
Yep. And so they would set up these tours. They were go-getters and they would set up these tours and we became friends. And so I jumped in the van with them with my banjo and would open up the show, like would play like three or four songs. And these were like punk rock, hardcore venues, you know, and
yeah, was
but
that
also, but also like living rooms. And
but I mean, to get up, was. If you're playing a punk cut, you know, nowadays I feel like, well, music is so like the spectrum is so big when it comes to audiences. Now I feel like, I mean, you look at like a poster for a, like a Coachella poster and it's just like from here to there. But I feel like, you know, in the early 2000s and late 90s, when I was going to shows as well, like it would be like the lineup was just all these bands that sounded similar. And then to get up there with a banjo and just start playing something totally different, was that something you're like, I don't know how the crowd's going to receive this, but whatever, we're going to go for it.
It was a new experiment every night. It felt like, you know,
okay,
because you're exactly right. It would, especially in that, at that level, you know, a band books a show in a town at a place. And then, so, and another band hears about it in that town and they say, hey, can we jump on the show too? Sure. Another band hears about it. Oh, cool. There's a show happening. We didn't have to book it. We can just jump on. Cool. Right. Yeah, you're on. Before you know it, there's six or seven bands. I mean, it was super common to have like a band would play 15 minutes and, you know, and then another band would play 20 minutes. And it was really common. And, mm-hmm. and but it was cool. It was all community and it was all good. So then I was able to stick out and be unique by like, and then I would get up with a banjo and everyone would kind of get quiet.
That's cool.
And pay attention. Cause it was like a loving crowd, really. Like even then people were ready to hear something different and it's kind of a palate cleanser. You could take out your earplugs, you know, and hear something different. So I had an advantage in that way. Cause it just stuck out and people would go, oh, and they'd stop talking and listen. And so that was the way I started touring and we burned up the road. We played everywhere in the United States. And then I went to Europe with them.
Wow.
Before my first record came out and yeah, did it over there. And so we really learned how to like, you know, you get your 10,000 hours, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And also like how to sleep on floors, how to be on the road.
And
how to
be like courteous,
how to show up on time, how to be cool and you know, and then the people would say, hey, that was cool, come back next time. Like when you come back on a tour of your own, you can play here. And so then I would set up tours on my own like that, and this is before I even had a record or anything. So that was kind of the start of it.
And then you put a record out. Well, you got signed, right? But you had already put out two albums before signing,
I had done some like burnt CDs and like, okay. Hell, I had tapes. I had like burnt CDs that I would either give away or sell for a dollar or whatever. And they had my email in them. I would like photocopy the CD covers and like,
oh, sure.
Give them away. And but then in like 2002, the band that I was with, they were called Vita Blue. They had to change mm-hmm. their name to 10 grand. But
I know the name. Yeah.
10 grand. Yeah. They wouldn't have. Yeah. They were awesome, but they sort of like were before they were ahead of their time a little bit, and okay. they were amazing, but they got signed by a label out of Chicago. We played in Chicago all the time, called Southern Records. And they were also based in London. London was the main base, but they had a headquarters in Chicago too. Some people came out to see them and sign them, and they saw me and liked me too. And they said, "Hey, come by the office tomorrow morning before you head out of town." And oh man, I wow. was like 24 years old and was like, yes. Like, and cause they had put out a bunch of cool, like indie rock. And there's this band called 90 Day Men that they did, this band called Sweep the Leg Johnny, Karate, Numero Group is re-releasing a bunch of that stuff now, but just great, like weird indie rock, you know. And then me doing like a country folk, dark gothic folk thing. And so yeah, so that was in 2003, my first record came out. So I did three records with them and they were awesome. They were really cool. But that, and then I finally ended up getting someone that could kind of book me. I got a booking agent. Again, this booking agent, he was out in New York City or Philadelphia and then New York City, but he was like a punk rock guy. He was like, I book like, I mean, all sorts of different stuff, but like, I don't book stuff like you, but I'm willing to take you on. And again, it
you
was
kind of have that punk rock vibe. I mean, like it works, you know, it reminds yeah. me of like an Against Me earlier, like some of their songs in the beginning were kind of faster, like, yeah. not as like heavy. I don't know how to explain it. I don't know if that's a great reference, but no, like I'm trying to think.
It's the perfect reference because they were burning it up around the same time we were. And they were killing it already, like reinventing Axl Rose.
Yeah, reinventing Axl Rose.
And so we would go down to Florida and see their posters all over. And mm-hmm. and I heard it and was just like, oh, they're at that time, Laura Jane Grace. Who I just love. She still just kills it. Her songs are so good, but she pioneered a thing that I didn't have words for, that it was like, oh, okay, folk punk. That's a thing.
Yeah, it was like
and
a
she,
folk
she
punk.
Like, she helped like, I mean, I don't know. People can argue about this, but she helped invent that pretty much. I mean, there's people that were on the verge of that and stuff, but she really like brought it to the people. So Against Me was always a big, like touchstone, you know, and cause uh-huh. they were burning it up right when we were, and then they really like took off cause they worked hard and wrote great songs. And then I got to tour with them later. Well, because of this booking agent, he would put me on tour with like, bands like that, like Clutch and Converge. There's a band called Converge out of Boston.
Oh, I love Converge too. Jane Doe and like, just like, yeah. That band is awesome.
Just heavier than heavy. Like, not like, I don't even know what they do. It's the heaviest thing I've ever heard. Like,
I know. Yeah, and then you rated the lyrics and you're like, damn, like this is so good. And you can't really understand any of it when you're singing.
Yep. Jake Bannon, man, forever. I love those guys.
Yeah, and, he's yeah, wild like on stage, and climbs in the rafters and stuff, like nuts.
I love watching them. Yeah, so fun. I toured with them in England one time.
That's amazing.
So it was awesome, and they're awesome, and yeah, did a tour in Florida with Against Me, and so yeah, was just swimming in those waters, and had one foot kind of in the more folk world and one foot in that world. And I don't know. I just always liked it like that. It was just always a weird way to do it. But Against Me is like a perfect touchstone for that. And she still writes. And then we were both on Bloodshot Records at the same time for a couple years. And we kind of keep crossing paths every once in a while. Every time I see her, I'm just blown away by what she does. I think she's got a new album either out or coming out.
Yeah, I don't know.
But Laura Jane Grace.
Yeah, Laura Jane Grace is doing stuff. And then Yeah, Solo, and then with Against Me. I don't know if Against Me has it. It's been a while, I think, since Against Me.
But yeah, yeah. Her new thing is the solo thing.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know if she reinventing the Axl Rose and Eternal Cowboy, like those, and even Searching for a Form of Clarity, the one they did on Fat Records. That song Joy. That's what it caught your so songs kind of remind me a little bit of that song Joy, but yours is just faster. You're faster, but
that's a high compliment.
Just kind of, yeah, I don't know. And then that split they did, I really liked too, but I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head. Or maybe it was this EP or seven. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, and just so prolific. I mean, they just, yeah. And they were really nice to me and just really cool. Again, that community, I've almost never really had any bad. I mean, maybe I could think hard and find some bad incident or something, but that community in general is pretty loving and accepting. I'm sure there's exceptions to, obviously there's fucking assholes and no matter what genre
you could find one, I'm sure.
And there are, I know for a fact there are. And, but, in general, it was just like a cool, loving, community to have. And so it was a good way to come up, and yeah, touring with them was really cool. And then, yeah, on to different record labels and on and on. And
you did a lot of the earlier albums you did, right? You did kind of like a concept albums. You did like three albums, right? They were kind of a concept. And then you did another concept album from what I'm remembering, what I read.
Yeah. Those first three records on Southern had a concept, a lot about life and death. I had lost my parents like not long before that. And so it had a lot to do with that and about living on the farm.
Yeah, you must have. I mean, you were young when you lost your parents.
I was a teenager. Awful.
Sorry. Yeah.
And so it was a lot of songs about that and, you know, the cycles of life and death and, you know, planting in the spring, harvesting in the fall, mm-hmm. Just that life is all these cycles, right? And people are like that too. We have our cycles and we're all going to die and that's okay. And things have a lifespan, you know? And so those first three records had a lot to do with that. And then I got to work with, another dream come true. Got to be on Anti Records for a little bit, which is part of Epitaph.
Oh
and
yeah.
So I got to meet like Brett Gurewitz Bad Religion was always a huge, influence on me. Like, and talking to Brett, I covered one of their songs for this compilation. Called Don't Prey on Me.
Don't Prey on Me. I just listened to that because I was going through your discography and I'm like, is this because I was looking at that album and I'm like, is this a Bad Religion cover? And then I realized the whole album was all covers after kind of listening to it. But the how it started was I checked out that Bad Religion cover.
Yeah. And so they had done a comp like before that I had done it. So I kind of redid it for this out that album, but I had been playing it live and stuff. And Brett Gurewitz, I met him at the Epitaph offices a few times. And one time he was like, hey, I really like that cover. And it blew my mind. It was like praise from Caesar. It was like, you are one of my songwriting idols. Like talk about DIY, like starting that label. Just that dude has been in the trenches forever.
Oh yeah. And, discovered, you know, broke so many bands with that label. They're basically a major, but they're not, you know,
they're like a big, you know, a huge indie. So it was perfect. And so being on, you know, Anti, which is kind of part of it, but Anti does its own thing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Anti
has great bands. I mean,
it was really fun. They treated me really good too. They were awesome. And so that first record with them was called Animals in the Dark. And a lot of people think that is my first record because that was the one that kind of broke through a little bit.
Yeah, that one has before that. Hell and High or High Water. That song I had heard quite a bit before digging deep into your discography.
Yeah, yeah, and so they really got behind me and did me really good, man. They were
put
awesome,
on
really
bigger
nice.
Tours? Wouldn't you or like how you know? Just was it kind of just notoriety and people like knowing? Because, you know, I remember as a kid, if I saw a band that like Epitaph put out or Fat Records or Anti, then it would be like, oh, I need to go check out this band because they're on this label, which kind of it has a lot of the time would be a you know, they signed bands because they're similar to other bands possibly, or they'd be kind of in the same vein, except for Anti is quite different than like an Epitaph or Fat Records. But did they help you with more of the, like, just having the name, or was it like you could get bigger tours, or just you had been, you know, established more at that point? Like, what do you think kind of, yeah like with that album, or not that album in general, but just being on all that Anti?
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of all that. Like, I had been doing so much and playing so much that I was really primed. I was really ready when they came knocking. I was ready. You know, I was like, oh, I know exactly how to play shows. I know exactly how to tour. I know how to write songs. And so I was ready when they came calling.
Okay.
They called my uncle. I was living. I didn't have a phone or any electricity. I was living in this cabin. And I didn't anything, and I was just gone most of the time and on tour. And so somehow they got my uncle's number, who lived like down the road, and he came over on his four-wheeler.
Oh my gosh, four-wheeler, that's crazy. Over
and was like, hey, there's somebody on the phone from Epitaph Records. Like, I was like, oh, this is a joke, right? Like,
yeah, right.
And like, they left this number. Like, I don't know. I don't even know how they got my uncle's number or whatever, but ended up talking to them.
Yeah, they wanted you, obviously, to seek you out that far. That's amazing.
And it went out from there. But they just have much more distro as far as like getting the records in stores and getting it in front of people. They had much more of that. The name had some cachet, and my booking agent, who was the same guy. I had him for like another 10 years after that, and we're still friends.
Wow.
He started getting me on some pretty cool tours. Like, I was able to tour with the Pogues a bunch.
Wow.
Irish band, yeah, the Pogues. Yeah, a bunch. I got to tour with Chris Cornell.
Wow.
From Soundgarden.
Yeah. Was that stuff, on his, stuff like solo, that, when he was doing the solo albums?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And that was another, like, cause I grew up like loving Soundgarden and all that stuff, you know, too. And he was a really cool guy. Chris was a really, really beautiful soul, but stuff like that, where I was getting on these bigger tours. And so, yeah, it all sort of culminated and helped. And yeah, it was just really fun, and they treated me really good. And then, yeah, that kind of went away. And then, or that, you know, I don't think I like sold as many records as they would have liked and stuff. And they, but yeah, I love those guys. They were fine.
And
yeah.
And you did three albums with them, which is incredible. Yeah. Right.
I mean, yeah. That I'm really proud of.
Yeah.
And so that first one, that Animals in the Dark record, I was in a political mood because it was during the first Bush, second administration of George,
yeah,
Bush.
When he got reelected, right? Yeah, like after, yep, 9/11. And that,
not,
yeah,
not his dad, who was the first Bush. This was the, right, second Bush, second,
not
part
H-W.
Two, part two.
Yeah.
And so everyone was just pissed off, and it was ripe for like a political songwriting. And I always liked like Billy Bragg and stuff like that weren't afraid to speak their mind about certain things. So that the Animals in the Dark has a lot of that vibe going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I always try to switch it up with each record, try to come up with a new sort of concept. It helps me write and come up with stuff. If I sort of have some parameters on, like, it's sort of about this, you know? And,
right.
And so the new one, it's called Silently the Mind Breaks, and it'll be out in January.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, yeah, it has a lot to do with just how your mind can sometimes be your own enemy, and like overcoming that and just kind of learning how to find a symbiosis with your own mind, you know,
mm-hmm.
which,
yeah,
is harder than it seems sometimes. Like, is my mind part of me? Am I my mind, or am I separate from my mind? I think about this stuff all the time. Like, are you your worst thoughts? You know, like, right. No, you're not. You know, sometimes you have bad thoughts and you let them go or whatever. And that's not you. You know, you.
Yeah, if all, you act on stuff, them, that's a bit different, right?
Exactly.
Having a thought versus acting on the thought. That's,
you know, yeah, these awful dark, Exactly. These awful dark thoughts that you just go, whoa, that was dark. Let that go. Whatever. Yeah. We all have them, you know,
100%.
Just weird stuff like that. But the mind, as far as an entity that you live with and deal with and kind of wrestling it, mm-hmm. and coming to terms with these things. And so this new album has a lot to do with that and has a lot to do with everyday people coming up against the wall. You know, when you think you can't go anymore, like you think you've, especially these last few years, man. And even before that, I mean, there's always something, but you think you can't go anymore. Like you think you've been pushed to the limit and
right,
you
you're like,
keep going. You keep going. Yeah,
something. What's next? What's after this?
And you keep going and you like, maybe it's your kids or maybe it's whatever motivation you just like, I got to keep going. And so it's stuff like that too. That has a lot to do with this record. And so I'm really proud of it. I think it's some of the best stuff I've written in a long time. And I'm putting it out myself. It's the first record.
You're doing a self-release, which I think is awesome. And did you, how long have you been back living on the farm you grew up on? Has it been a few years or?
Yeah. So I moved back here with my wife. It's been like 11 years ago.
Oh, okay. So I didn't know if this was kind of I'm back to where I grew up and that's kind of going through my mind. But I mean, we had plenty to, you know, there's plenty of things
to draw on.
Happened. Yeah. Last handful of years, but
there's always kind of that too. Like, man, my heater just kicked on. Do you hear that?
No.
Is it okay? Cool.
I don't hear it.
I'm out in my little home studio. My little heater just kicked on.
It's freezing here. Like I can't, if it's snowing there, when I went out, I just looked at my watch to see what the weather is. It's 39, but it was like 26 earlier. So right. I can imagine it's even colder there.
So I didn't know if it was distracting on the audio. I could shut it off, but if you can't hear it, that's cool.
No, I can't hear it at all.
And so the farm nature themes are always kind of in there too. My dad was like a naturalist and my mom too, like just real appreciators of nature. So I write a lot about that in my songs too. But this one, it was really that struggle with what do you do with your own mind sometimes? And so, when it was time to put it out, I was talking to a bunch of different labels and it came around to like, maybe I just want to keep it myself and own the masters. That's a big thing. Owning your own masters and just putting it out yourself. Mm-hmm. And I've got a distro company that's going to help me like get it in stores and kind of get it out there and stuff. So it'll be an experiment, man. But I've talked to people that have done it and said they really, really liked it. And maybe you're not getting it in front of as many people as you would on like an anti, you know,
but still, I mean,
you own it.
Yeah, you own it all. You already have a fan base and it's not your first rodeo with the album, right? And it's almost like with the internet and the power of that and social media and all these different outlets, it's like, I feel like nowadays, like you don't really need the label to get, the gatekeepers have definitely been, you know, there's not as many. I guess if you wanted to be on pop radio or, you know, something like that, maybe the Atlantic name would hold a lot more weight. But I mean, if you're doing what you do and the independent thing, and it doesn't matter if you have the numbers and the fans, who cares? I mean, you don't need the other people to do it.
No, exactly. Like at my level, and I'm at my little level, like my tiny little level, whatever that is, like it totally makes sense. You know, like I'm not shooting for like trying to play in front of millions of people on the Warp Tour or whatever. Like,
right.
Although take that Warp Tour. Hit me up. Come on. But I mean, I like my level. I can play shows anywhere and get a decent crowd and have fun. Like mostly I just want to have fun, connect with people. And now more than ever, thanks to my ever loving song, my ever loving bride, my long suffering wife, helps me with a lot of the social media stuff because I'm awesome. Super lousy at it. And so she, bless her, she like does so much of that stuff and helps me have an Instagram presence and a Facebook presence and all that stuff. awesome. Without that, I don't know what I would do. She really, I can't thank her enough for that. So yeah, you get your hardcore fans and you get the people that like you. And when you show up to Cleveland, Ohio at the Grog Shop, you know, 100 people are going to come or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm like, to me, I'm happy with that. Like I don't have to answer to anyone. And I would tell an up and comer, like, yeah, go for it like that. And a lot of people are doing that anyway. I mean, like, I think of like SoundCloud rappers and stuff.
Oh yeah.
That are millionaires. I'm like, you have one song out. How are you already like a millionaire? And it, you know, it's just having like a great social media presence,
sense.
Having
yeah.
following, having getting hits and stuff that I have not figured out, but like, or an extreme example, another great example is Chance the Rapper,
mm-hmm.
who never had a label or anything. And he plays on Saturday Night Live and he does play in stadiums yeah. and stuff.
Yeah,
he
Macklemore just, did that too, I think. Was just, yeah. They never had a dude. He never signed a major. Never.
And if you're that talented, record. You know, like.
It doesn't matter.
If you're that talented, the proof's in the pudding, man. Like those guys are, they're good. So, yeah. But at my little level, it makes sense to press the vinyl myself and sell it. And that's then, yeah, cool. And then I've got a company that's going to help me get it in stores and all that stuff too. Distro.
Mm-hmm.
And all that, but so yeah, it'll be an experiment. If I talk to you a year from now, I'll let you know how the experiment went, you know.
Yeah, well, let's do it. We'll set something up for a year from now. I'd love to chat with you about it again. You're doing a tour come, I think, February or something.
I'll be touring all next year. I'm trying to get this going. I'm trying to call it the Errors Tour before someone else takes that.
Yeah,
so I'm going on the Errors.
Get it now.
The Errors Tour.
Errors. I love that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, because I, you know, someone else took the Errors Tour. I don't know if you.
Oh yeah, I thought
that,
you were making a joke else... saying Errors Tour. I was like, yeah, that's yeah, like I want to. Oh, yeah. That's going to be my tour.
No, someone took that. I forget her name, but Errors, someone is on the
Errors
Tour.
But that's good.
I forget
that's
her name.
Good. Yeah, right.
So,
wow.
No, it's stupid is what it is. But
that's
but,
funny.
So I'll be like on tour it. All next year.
But not coming to Nashville yet. Stupid, I was like, oh, he's playing Tennessee. And since I'm so new to Tennessee, I was like, where's Johnson City? And it's like, oh, it's on the North Carolina border. That's about 4 hours in the opposite direction from me. I think I could
get
to Georgia or something quicker than that.
Yeah, I think I was going to be there. I normally do, like, I've done, like, the Bluebird and, like, the Basement.
Those are great spots.
The Exit Inn and a bunch of other places. But, on that run, I won't be. But I definitely will be again because my booking agents are out of Nashville.
New
ones that I've worked with for, like, 5 years now, they're awesome. And they're out of Nashville, so they're way more in touch with the more folk country side of things, which as I get older, that's more less punk rock venues, more, other type of venues. I mean, I'll still play anywhere. I'll play wherever. but these guys, they're cool. But they're out of Nashville, so I'll definitely be there sometime. But yeah, starting in February, I'll be hitting the road. And then all year long, I'll be touring. And it's going to be fun, man. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. I'm not a person anyone knows. I'm not really like that much of a known quantity, man. But
you have a fascinating story, and I love your music, and that's all that matters. I appreciate your time. You've answered my final question a couple of times throughout this interview, but I'm just going to ask you again because I want to know if you have. You said, you know, I would say this to an up and comer, but do you have any additional advice to any aspiring artist?
I love this because I always gleaned information from, you know, like other artists I was on tour with, like bigger artists that had been at it for a while. I would like soak it up and get advice and get thoughts, and no one's gonna have the exact wisdom that you need. Like you have to get it from a lot of different places to suit your, you know, my experience won't be the same as a kid's now coming up at all. But there's certain truisms that'll just always be the case. One of them is try to keep if you're going to tour, like if touring is something you want to do and playing shows, even if it just starts with playing shows in your hometown and then maybe getting to the town that's 2 hours away. And then maybe from there getting, you know, just not grand touring ambitions, but just little ambitions like that. If you're going to do that, keep your overhead low, meaning you don't have to spend a ton of money to tour. Like, try to get a network of people that, like, maybe you can stay with friends, stay with people, like, instead of getting a hotel room. You don't need a big giant tour bus. Like, try to do with like a small van. If you're a band, like, just like keep your overhead low. I mean, Mike Watt put it the best, like jam in a Econo. He called it the Minutemen. Like, we jam Econo, and don't spend a ton of money. That way you can come home with a little bit of money and put that toward the next thing, but keep your overhead low. Like, you don't, people's eyes start getting too big for their stomach. And they think they need a lot of fancy stuff and tour buses and all that. And like, you don't need that yet. Just get on the road, get in front of people, be wise with your money. That's one thing. That's something that'll always be true. Get advice wherever you can. Of course, now it's easier than ever. There's a lot more of a playbook for it now. Mm-hmm. But I would say that. I would say, yeah, get your community in place. And again, that's easier than ever. On the internet, you get your community going. You could probably show up in a town and already have a crowd if they know your SoundCloud, if they know your Bandcamp, if they know your SoundCloud, whatever. You maybe never played in that town, but you could already have a crowd there, you know. So that's easier now more than ever. But get your community going, not just fans, but like fellow musicians, whatever type of music you do. Make friends with other people that kind of do that. And then maybe you get on tour together. Like, hey, maybe we could hit up a tour together and like even do more. Like, and I always say, like, community, be smart with your money. And also just have fun. Fuck it. Like, what, you know, yeah. Have fun and make music too. Like, that, let us not forget you're making music because you love it. Like, and if it's your ambition to make it your living, that's one thing. If it's just your ambition to like play on the weekends and have fun, make that your thing, whatever, like whatever it is, but have fun, write good songs. That's the other thing. Write good songs. but all jokes aside, like, yeah, if touring is your ambition and making a living at it, be smart with your money. Have a lawyer look at anything you sign. That's another one.
Smart, yeah.
That's things that sometimes I didn't always do that. And like, you know, a lot of legalese and contracts can be very complicated. So have a lawyer look at it. It seems it might even cost you a little money, but it'll cost you later down the road more if you just sign stuff. So that stuff like that, common sense stuff like that, but mostly have fun, play music.